fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
When I turned 40, I changed everything I was doing. I either closed all my businesses or sold everything I had just to go on cool hunting adventures.
I think we're all set to go, so we'll just get started.
Cool.
What we usually like to do is, especially first-time guests, get a little background on you. I like to give people a place they can go and kind of, because you got a lot of followers and stuff, maybe they want a place they can go kind of get your background a little bit. So Why don't we go all the way back here? Where did you grow up and who got you into the outdoors? Was that early on or was that later? So we can start earlier on, but we can work our way up to where we're at now.
Yeah, man, like super early. Like I was couldn't even walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. My dad, way back in the day, man, when I was born, he used to run a trap line in Nebraska, like western part of Nebraska. And that's how he would make money in the winter, is trapping. Mm-hmm. So he would just take me along in his trap line, man, which was like a lot of driving in the truck. And then if he had to get out, he just like strap me or carry me. Like, so I was like trapping as a baby. I barely remember. I do remember we have pictures of this. He caught a lynx cat. And that was a big deal for the area. So we got like pictures in the paper. So
right,
that's when it started, man. And so, you know, always kind of was always around hunting, but like, it wasn't just my dad and my uncles. It just wasn't like a dude thing. My mom hunted a lot too. So I like hunt with my mom and like, it was a whole family thing and, you know, little podunk town in Nebraska. So it was a lot of like whitetail, turkey, mm-hmm. pheasant type of stuff. And, you know, so I got out of it a little bit in my early 20s, man. I was in college. So I was like focused on girls and like sports and, right. you know, and then, you know, the access of like private land started going away a little bit. That is, it was like right when that thing started to start. And, mm-hmm. But I got back into it super heavy late 20s. And when I moved to Colorado and I started elk hunting, I got into it heavy again. So
for sure. When did you start bow hunting? Was that before the college years or after?
Yeah, dude. I was bow hunting as a little toddler, man.
Yeah.
Like not hunting, but like I had a bow.
Yeah.
I was slinging these old school aluminum arrows that were all bent up and like no fletches on it. And
yep.
you know what I mean? Like, and we didn't have sights. So everything was instinctual but just a crappy bow and a aluminum arrow that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm lucky I had three of them, and out of three of them, I probably had three fletches total on those arrows. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's, that's how it went with those things. And if you're like me, most of them ended up bent or broken at some point, those yeah. aluminum arrows. Do you remember what type of bow your first one was?
Pretty sure it was a bear.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty sure it was a bear, just like single cam, like just the, I'm just remembering back, like the arrow rest was just this little rubber like thing that kind of came out to the side. And, you know, obviously no peep, no sight, mm-hmm. but it was a compound.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really shot much from traditional bow. It's always compound bow.
Right. Although like that style that you're talking about is pretty close to the
yeah,
traditional
stuff,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's
basically
a traditional bow, but just with some pulleys on it. Right?
Yeah, so. Those early compound bows were not nothing like what we're shooting today. What was, actually, going back a little, that's a question that we asked pretty much everybody. And it's amazing how many guys' first bow was either a bear or a PSE, because they were like, I mean, they were two of the biggest ones back in those days,
yeah.
right? So a
mm-hmm.
lot of guys, it was either bear or PSE, so that's interesting. But do you remember your first big game animal you killed with the bow? Was it a whitetail?
Yeah, it was definitely a whitetail. But so first one I killed was with a rifle. And actually, like, I don't know if it's due to a visual podcast, but like, mm-hmm. if you can see my screen, it's this whitetail right here.
Okay.
I shot him when I was 15 with a gun.
Nice. And
real good whitetail. Like, he's about 160.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, that area of Nebraska back in the day, like, that was a big deal, right? Like, I shot a big whitetail my first deer. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back even further. Like, you know, I think I was 8 years old sitting in a tree stand with my mom, and I have my little compound bow with a little practice tip on it. And I'm thinking I'm big and bad. And there, a buck comes in and she ends up missing a buck. And then I'm like, all right, mom, the next deer, can I take a shot out of it? Can I take a shot out? And it's, this is probably illegal as heck. I probably should be saying it, but
statute of limitations is up. You're good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like I'm an 8 year little boy and like, you know, she's like, fine, sure. And I like sling an arrow at this doe and hit her, knock her down. It didn't penetrate at all because I'm probably pulling like 30 pounds, right? Like if yeah. that, but that was my first real memory of like actually shooting at a big game animal.
You know? Yeah, that's awesome. Were you just like completely buck fever, shaking all over kind of deal?
Not really. I was actually pretty calm on that one. Not too bad.
Your mom broke the ice when she missed.
Yeah. No, she was definitely shaking, you know, after she missed. Yeah, that adrenaline dump. But man, I just remember like from the earliest memories, my dad, my uncles, or my mom, or whatever, who would go out hunting, I couldn't go quite yet. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't big enough, you know, to handle some of the elements. And I remember I couldn't wait for these guys to get home to tell me what happened. Tell me the story. And there's always a story, right? Like that's what was awesome about my uncles and my dad is like, there's always some kind of like funny story or like, oh, he was coming in and like this happened and I screwed it up this way. But like, you know, there's always a story to tell after every hunt. It was just so exciting for me just to hear about hunting.
Yeah. That's one of the best parts about it is getting together with your buddies and telling the stories afterwards or hunting with them and having that story to share together for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What got you into the Western hunting after school?
Yeah. So, I was dating a girl in my early 20s and we wanted to move from Nebraska and get a completely different like culture, different feel, right? Of where we live. I obviously always lived in Nebraska at that point. And I wanted to go to Boston because I wanted to experience that like kind of rough East Coast or, you know, like kind of hardcore culture.
Yep.
She wanted to come to Colorado. So she won.
Of course.
And here I am. I still live in Colorado, which is crazy, right? Early 20s, we moved to Colorado and we were dating for like 3 years and we broke up like 3 months after we moved and like I just stayed. And then I like, you know, after a couple of years of kind of get my feet under me, I'm like, man, all these mountains and I'd love to hunt an elk. So, of course, just like every other knucklehead that's out there that's like, I want to go hunt elk. I'm going to do a bow hunt. I'm going to do an archery backpacking bow hunt for my first elk hunt, right? Like, of course, like. The odds were like probably negative. So they weren't even zero. They're like negative 20% that I was going to even see an elk, right? So that's what got me in it, man. That was it right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course you're going to dive head first though, right? I mean, that's just kind of the guy thing to do. So did the ex-girlfriend like move to Boston? So I'll show him.
No, I think she ended up going to like Arizona and then back to Nebraska after that. But like, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. Just everything kind of happens for a reason now, right? So I've been living here well over 20 years now and I got a wife and kids and family and a business and everything. I'm rooted here in Colorado. And Colorado's great, man. And I wouldn't change anything because I like live in Nebraska. There's not a whole lot, man. Like the white.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tells good. As far as the hunting, but there's just not a lot to do, man. It's not like the mountains of Colorado. It's beautiful. Fly fishing, snowboarding, elk hunting, mule deer. Like it's pretty amazing, except for there's a lot of people, in Colorado, man. So I'm kind of looking to make a move into like a different Western state with a little lower population.
Okay. Yeah. Well, has the change in the permits for Colorado changed the amount of hunters out there? Have you noticed the difference yet? No,
dude, not at all, man. Like, it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Like, and so they took away the non-resident over-the-counter archery tag.
Okay. Right?
So I'm, as a resident, I'm like, yeah, man, like I can go do some over-the-counter public land hunting and not just have hunters everywhere. But it, dude, we're still pretty flooded with hunters. It's pretty bad. Yeah. It's, which, you know, I'm torn, right? I say it's bad because takes away my opportunities to hunt a little bit, right? But on the other hand, man, it's a really good thing. Like we have hunters in the field donating money for conservation and like to keep what we love to do alive. So, you know, it's that hunter dilemma of like, don't hunt where I hunt, but everyone go hunt, right?
So. Exactly. Yeah, no, I get that. We talk about that a lot. Like in Illinois, we get a ton of out-of-state guys, especially Southern Illinois. Like the guys from Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, they'll come up to Southern Illinois because we are over the counter. It's closer than like Northern Missouri, the better parts of Indiana. It's like the closest big buck state that's over the counter because Iowa is like every 5 years you draw a whitetail tag now, right? So we get a lot of those guys. So we have a lot of those discussions. It's like, yes, we want them to come and hunt, but nobody wants them to hunt their spot or they're worried about it being overcrowded. But I try to keep that attitude you're talking about. Like it's good that we have people hunting. And if they're not hunting here, would they be hunting somewhere else? Probably, but I don't want to run them off just because they're costing me opportunities. You know, I think it's better that we have more people out there because while we do have a lot of infighting with the hunters, I think the more we have, the higher numbers, we're going to be better off when it comes to outside influences, people trying to take away what we're trying to do, what we like to do, you know?
Absolutely. And there's a lot more of that going on than what you realize.
Oh, yeah.
People trying to take it away.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some interesting stuff going on in Illinois recently, but I want to go back out west to your stuff. Mm-hmm. What got you into filming and all that? And when did that start? Was that early on, like what after you got started, after you got moved out there? Was it later kind of thing? What did that look like? And were you having pretty good success beforehand and then you decided, like what that whole process look like for you?
Yeah, no, good question, man. I had started getting versed with elk hunting, and what's really ramped my learning curve is I hired a guide to take me. I know a lot of guys will turn their nose up at hiring a guide, but here's what it really helped me is I could have stumbled around the mountains for a long time and learned very slowly what to do, what not to do. But in a course of 5 days with a guide, I asked probably 1,000 questions and I learned so fast.
Yeah.
You know, way faster than it probably would have taken me 5 years to learn what I learned in 5 days. Right. So it was super beneficial to me. And the next year I went out on my own and killed like a 300-inch bull. So like, it was awesome. Right. Like I definitely see the value of it now. That was a $3,500 guided elk hunt about 20 years ago. And now like, you know, they're like well over 10 grand for the same thing. But that's where I got a little more versed with elk hunting. But I didn't start filming until later in life, man, more like into my 30s, because actually late 30s, because I got super entrepreneurial. I started buying and owning businesses and running businesses, right? And I'm starting to preface this of like, look, just because I own businesses and I got super entrepreneurial doesn't mean I'm rich and it doesn't mean I have a lot of money. Like,
yeah.
Right. Like exactly. I know some guys look at me like, oh, Kurt, you're going on these badass hunts and you're successful because you can buy your way. Like, nope, I'm not, man. I didn't have much money. Like I had a lot of stress. I had a lot of things to do. Mm-hmm. But in part of my entrepreneurial journey, I owned different types of businesses that I was doing marketing for. And I realized, well, it's cheaper if I just hired some like photographers or videographers and created my own commercials and do my own marketing. So I did that. And then after doing that a little bit, I'm like, I wonder, and I love watching hunting. So I'm like, I wonder if I bring one of you along with me on a hunt, like how that would go. And I wonder if that'd be fun. And like, so I just grabbed one of them and I said, hey, let's go on an elk hunt and filmed it. And it's funny, like he wasn't a hunter at all. So I'd like figure out the gear for him and everything. And, you know, it was a kind of an S show, you know what I mean?
Like, oh yeah.
But man, I loved it. I fell in love with just documenting my journey and whatever I was doing and then trying to entertain someone else with it. Because a lot of guys, you know, they don't even get an experience of going on a backcountry elk hunt. Like they've never been able to have that experience. I do that quite often and I get to film it and have them come along with me almost on these journeys. Right. So I just fell in love doing it. And now like, I don't even like, I definitely can go hunting without filming, but I really like it, man. It's just so much fun.
Oh, yeah. It adds another element, too, for sure. I don't know that people realize just how much different it is to have a camera. If you're trying to get stuff on camera, right? Like, you can bring anybody along and tell them, hey, film what you can. I'm not going to worry about you. But, like, if you're worried about getting it on film, it is a whole different ballgame.
Oh, man. I mean, if you got a videographer that understands hunting and knows how to hunt, that's a big deal. But it's pretty hard to find a guy that knows hunting but also knows film.
And that wants to film, right? Most of the guys that know hunting, they want to hunt.
Yeah, for sure. So it's easier to find a guy that is good at filming but has no clue about hunting. But then you're just holding their hand and you're babysitting a lot of times of like, yo, why are you standing up right now? Like, get down. Oh my God. You know, like they can see you.
Yeah.
So like there's that learning curve. And I've done a lot of self-filming too, where I'm putting together episodes self-filming, and that is tough, man. That's a difficult thing to do. I've messed up a lot of hunts trying to film and hunt at the same time. That's super hard.
Yeah, that is even another element in itself. Hunting with a cameraman is tough for sure. Communication, getting everything right. But self-filming, no matter what you're doing, like in a tree stand for whitetails, like turkeys, forget that if you're not in a blind. Going out west and self-filming that stuff on the ground, like walking around spotting stock, and it just doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're trying to film it yourself, just however difficult you think it is, 10x that, and that's how much harder it is, at least when you're self-filming.
10x for sure. Like my first couple times trying to self film, like it was the biggest learning curve just to learn how to operate my equipment in the field. Like I had a GoPro and I'm just trying to figure that out. And half the footage is like speed ramps and slow-mos and like, I have no clue what the heck I'm doing. Right.
Right.
You know, you're in the moment and you're trying to get it to work and you're kind of panicked and yeah, it just turns out terrible. And then once you, you know, after I've done it for a while, I start to learn, I start to figure it out, figure out the equipment. And then you get to a whole new level of like, okay, I'm going on this hunt and I want to produce a...
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Film that is that the end result is like this. Like, you know, I'll give you my latest film is our grizzly bear hunt. It's called A Brush with Death. Mm-hmm. And even though I have a videographer with me, we have a game plan. We have a shot list of how what we want to shoot to make it look a certain way and make it, you know, end up a certain way with certain shots. And like, you know, and I'll get super tactical with you. Right. So like we're on the ground. It's not like I can just have some guy point a camera at me and it's going to turn out good for the viewer to have a good experience. Like you need to have wide angle shots. You got to think about this. Like, okay, we got to show where we're at. Then we need a medium angle. Then we need a tight angle. Then we need infilled narrative to kind of explain what's going on. And then drone shots for that very cinematic, like overhead landscape shot. And then it's got to be, you know, the audio's got to be spot on. We can't have the wind ripping through the mics and it's just miserable to listen to and watch. And then like, okay, kill sequence. If we think this is going to happen, what lens are you going to use? Like, how do we set up a second angle to get like the shot while the shot's happening and the animal? And like, there is so much you have to do just to put together a film or a show. And then the whole new level of like, okay, we want it to be a certain level. And we want it to be a certain, you know, type of film for somebody. It's like, and every hunt, man, no matter what our shot list is, it's like, I think as Mike Tyson that says, is like, you can have a game plan and everyone has a game plan until you get punched in the face. Mm-hmm. And that's so true with hunting. Like if you create a movie, you can script out everything. You've put up, you know, stages of every scene that you're filming. When you're on a hunt, there is no scripting. There is no like putting up a stage of how it should go. There is no like, oh, well, you wounded that animal. So, okay, take three, try shooting that animal again. Like you can't do any of that stuff, man. It's so hard to do, but when it all comes together somewhat well and I can entertain someone with it, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's the best. And that's something that we've got a group of guys that films and they'll probably listen to this and it'll be good for them. But I try to tell them all the time, like, just what you're talking about. You have to think about, what is this going to look like? How do I want this to look? And what is this going to look like? So I always try to send out before the season, like, a sheet of stuff. Hey, I need this, 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 and this, like, while you're out there. Because I'll tell them, it's great that you shot the deer, and maybe or maybe they didn't get it on camera. But if you do, that's awesome. However, I cannot make a 15-minute video out of 2 minutes of video. You know what I mean? I can't stretch that into 15 minutes. I can't tell the story with that, you know? You got to have those B-roll shots that you're talking about, mm-hmm. walking in, walking out, the wide-angle stuff, just leaves blowing in the wind, squirrels. Build the story, make them feel like they're there with you, because otherwise, they're just watching the back of your head, and then an animal gets shot. And if you shoot at a big enough animal, it'll get some views, but then it could be so much better, you know? And then is it really entertaining, and how many people are going to stick around? And you mentioned audio, too. That's a big one. If you're trying to watch something that has bad audio, I don't care what it is, people aren't going to watch it because it's so brutal. Hard.
Brutal. Yeah. Yeah, it's in bad, shaky footage. You're getting sick. We're trying to watch something. Like, it's so hard. You know, here's the biggest learning curve that I had was editing my own stuff. That was huge because I like, oh, cool, man. I filmed a hunt and I was successful. I can't wait to put this in Premiere, DaVinci, or whatever you edit on, and start editing. And then, like, I start looking at my footage. I'm like, oh, man.
Yes.
Well, didn't get that shot. Didn't get this shot. What am I going to do with this? This is garbage. Like, I can't do anything with this film. And I realize, next time I need to actually film a lot of B-roll. Like, 70% of my shots should be B-roll. Mm-hmm. And then I need infield narrative. And I need this. And I need that. I need, you know, there's so much that you learn just from editing your own stuff. Like, you know, and there's guys all the time that want to either just film or want to have a hunting show. They want to film their stuff. And I've had guys that have done it with me and within Western Obsessions. But I'm like, look, man, when you're out in the field trying to direct, you have no clue what you're directing if you can't edit. If you're not thinking about the edit when you're in the field, you're not going to have, you don't have garbage to come back to the editing floor with. It's just not going to work. You got to be thinking about the edit when you're hunting. You know,
you're absolutely right. You can tell the people too that edit their own stuff, or at least used to edit their own stuff and have that mindset. You can tell in the finished product. At least I can. I'm sure you can as well. Someone who's done it, like you can tell kind of what their mindset was and why they did this and why they did that and the shots they took versus somebody who's like you're saying, they don't really know the back end process. So without knowing that, you don't really know what you need on the front end.
Exactly, man. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, hopefully your listeners or whoever, or even some of your guys can take some of this away of like, oh, if I edit, I'll actually get way better at filming in the field.
You know? And we get so many guys like, so we'll do expos and we used to do 3 or 4 a year. And we would get so many people that come up to us and like, hey, I want to start filming hunts. How do I do that? And, you know, obviously I tell them like, just start. But then this kind of stuff. So like, I know we got a lot of listeners that will hopefully take what you're saying, what we're talking about, and maybe benefit them on that. Because, like, I think that's great, too. We were talking about the hunters, you know, and the access thing. There's a lot of guys that do what we do as far as filming and stuff, too, at our level, at your level, at different levels, that almost act like they don't want anybody else doing it. But there's room for everybody. I mean, honestly, is the good stuff's going to rise to the top. The bad stuff is going to go to the bottom, and they're eventually going to get tired and quit and whatever. But like, I encourage everybody to get out and try it and do it, because who knows? You might be really good at it. You might really enjoy it. And why would I try to get somebody to not do that just because they're competition or whatever? I mean, there's so much space for other creators and filmers, I think.
It's a mindset thing, man. You know, I'm a big believer in the law of abundance. I believe there is way more than enough for everyone to go around. There's a lot of guys that have the mindset of a scarcity mindset that think there's not much to go around. I better grab what's mine and defend it. Mm-hmm. It's just a super negative mindset, man. And your anxiety all the time, right? Like I don't like that mindset, but also you have to understand, like, why are you filming? What's the outcome? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to be like YouTube famous and have a bunch of views and think you're like a Billy Badass because you got, you know, 100,000 views on whatever of a clip? Or like, what's the real reason? For me, man, like I want to be up above. I want to be in that top 10% of guys that do it just because I want to produce really good stuff mm-hmm. for people. But really the real reason why I do it is legacy. And I don't want that word to get twisted on your viewers. So let me explain that. Mm-hmm. When I think of legacy, I think about like my grandkids, right? So if I look back at my grandpa, I may have a couple pictures of my grandpa, but that's about it. But my grandpa's grandpa, I don't even know that dude. I don't have one picture of my grandpa's grandpa. I have no clue who he was, right? And I may have had a, heard a story or two from my grandpa or grandma, maybe, but like my grandkids' grandkids, now with the internet and the way things are, could go back and understand who their great 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 grandpa Kurt, you know, doing a bunch of knucklehead stuff out in the on the wilderness, right? So
they could
understand who I am on that realm. I think is super cool.
Yep, that's going to be a cool thing too, because this is like the first generation that will have that, right? Like the, because we're the internet generation. We're kind of the first ones that have had this to put stuff out there, you know, like we're doing. And there are a lot of different reasons to do it. That's one reason that I for sure like doing the podcast, because of that and the filming. Also, it's for just to have it, you know, to go back to and relive that moment. And that's what a lot of guys want to do. They're like, I just want to film to show it to my kids or come back to the house and watch the hunt. And then
great.
I've talked to guys that just love self-filming, and I'm kind of this way. The big part of it for me is, how many times have you shot an animal and thought you hit it somewhere, and then you go back and look at the video, and it was like not real close to where you thought you hit it, right? Or you couldn't see exactly what happened. That, for me, as far as filming goes, is worth having a camera for everybody that bow hunts, especially, because then you just can tell so much, and then you're not messing up tracking that thing. And like, I'm sure you've had those experiences too.
Oh man, hundreds of times. Absolutely, man. It's so cool to be, oh man, yeah, I think that's a good shot. Or was it a good shot? I don't know where I hit it. Let me look back and analyze the shot. Okay, cool. That looks like a single lung. Here's now what we need to do instead of going push that animal. Now we have a game plan on what to do, right? So, so crucial, man. We just did a muzzleloader hunt with a buddy of mine, filmed it. And in the moment, like in our mind, that elk was broadside. But, and we couldn't find the elk, and we tracked it for miles, and we're like, man, God, what happened? What kind of shot was that? But when we went back and looked at the footage, it was quartering to us a lot harder than what we thought. So he got a single lung on that, right? And that elk went a long ways before dying. You know?
Yeah.
So
that makes all the difference in the world. And that's another reason to like try to have quality video too, because if you've got quality video, it's just that much easier to see. And not saying you got to go drop thousands of dollars on a camera or something, but if you can put a little money into your equipment, even if you're not trying to be the YouTube famous guy or whatever, if you're just doing it for that, like if you can get some good quality video, it makes such a huge difference on recovering animals and figuring out where you hit them. But you mentioned, we've talked about elk a little bit here. Is that like your number one thing now? You mentioned you got late 20s, you started hunting elk, and you were kind of hooked on it. Is it like, if you could hunt one thing for the rest of your life, is it elk?
Probably. If I had only pick one species to hunt the rest of my life, it would probably be elk.
Yeah.
They're just such a cool animal, and you know, archery hunting them in the rut and the bugle, so cool. Like I even like late season stuff. I mean, my number one thing, I just want to have a lot of adventures. I'm not super tied up on like what I need to kill or how big the animal is. Like, I just love going on adventures, man. You know, and that's the reason when we haven't got much into this, but I'll kind of prelude to it. When I turned 40, I changed everything I was doing. I either closed all my businesses or sold everything I had just to go on cool hunting adventures. And cause I just wanted to live my life the way that I want to live it. Like there's not, your life goes fast, man. You know, like, it'll, in a blink of eye, it'll be gone. I know you're a younger dude, but like you'll be my age really quick, man. And if you don't prioritize living the life you want to, you won't. You'll be living life for somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, no, that's good stuff, because I've got a couple kids now, and one of them will be 5 in just a few months. And it's like, dude, how did that happen? Like, I was sure already almost that age, you know? So I kind of get that, but I know, like, I understand that I don't really understand that yet, you know? Something I always, when we get the Western guys on, we've had a few of them in the past, something I always like to talk about is all these guys from back east that want to go out west, or at least they say they do. I think there's a few things that really get in the way, and whether it's like fear of the unknown, or they're worried about their fitness, or there's a huge burden on like trying to figure out tags and things like that and draws and stuff. And then also, I think one that I've talked to different guys is like grizzly bears, you know, or like predators out there. Like some guys are, they don't want to go out there and mess with all that stuff. give them some insight into what, how they could maybe get over that, those things, or maybe some encouragement to get out there and do it. Like, because I think I've been out for a mule deer hunt. I want to get out for an elk hunt. Like, just that one hunt that I've been on, it is worth figuring the stuff out and getting over whatever you're scared of to go out there and experience it. And I'm obviously, as much experience as you got, I would assume you would have the same sentiment.
Yeah, man. Here's the biggest thing that I would tell these guys. And by the way, like, I grew up whitetail hunting. So, like, if you want to talk whitetail, I'm good with it, right? But I'm a big Western guy now. So,
yeah, no, that's cool.
I have a hunting consultant agency, a booking agency, where I talk to hunters every day. And most of the hunters I talk to are over the age of 60.
Yeah.
These are guys with a little extra money that now want to do some of their bucket list hunts. And, you know, they're either about to retire or have already retired. And every one of them that I talk to, they are now, almost every one of them, I won't say every, most of them that I talk to are at a point in their life of like, look, I wish I would have done that elk hunt. I wish I would have done this hunt. I'm just not physically capable to do the hunt that I really want to do. But what can I do now that I'm not physical the way I should be anymore? What can I do now? So here's the biggest thing, guys, is if it's uncomfortable of what you don't know, we're talking about applications, preference points, getting to the west, being in shape on the mountain, you know, how to find elk. How uncomfortable do you think that's going to be when you're 80 years old and you look back and you never did it? Like, put yourself at 80 years old and say, crap, I never did it. How is that going to feel? So imagine that. And now, whatever age you're at right now, that should be powerful enough for you to buck it up and figure it out, right? And I don't care what obstacle it is, you should just figure it out and go do it. Unless you want to be 80 years old with a whole bunch of regret, right? So, and I'll get tactical for you guys. I won't just get all preachy on you, but like, that's the number one thing to like look at, man. Like, you don't want to be 80 years old and have regret. So
yeah,
tactically, research, man. Like, God, you have every answer to every question, any question in the entire world at your fingertips online. And AI search is amazing now. I'm literally using AI search for application strategies.
Yeah.
I did it for Arizona this year. I did it for New Mexico. I plugged into an AI search. I said, okay, here's what I want to do. Here's a state I want to hunt. Give me a strategy. And literally in 10 seconds, it spit out strategies of what units I should apply for and what order and an entire strategy, right? Like, we have that at the fingertips now. So there is no excuse of I don't know something, I don't know what to do. You have every answer at your fingertips. And then as far as the physical part, just stay in shape, man. Go for runs. And I can help tactically if we want to dive into how to stay in shape. I'm a big fitness guy. I understand that. So, like, get in shape, shoot your bow, shoot your gun, practice. Like,
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If you're a gun hunter, you need to shoot out to 400 yards if you're going to hunt in the West. So get a gun, get a scope that will allow you to do that. And most of that's equipment. You know, that's, I would say 80% is you need better equipment. 20% you need to practice in the right way, right? And then anybody can shoot 400 yards with the right gun. Anybody can. So get practicing with your bow. It's not whitetail hunting anymore. It's not 20, 30 yard shots, which it can be, but a lot of your Western hunt, when you're archery hunting mule deer or elk, like, you can shoot out to 50 yards pretty easily. So, like, I train out to 100 yards when I'm shooting my bow, not because I want to shoot a 100 yard shot. It's because that I want that 50 yard shot to feel like a chip shot.
Yep.
I want a lot of confidence, right? That's why I do it. And you know, shooting long distance like that, your form has to be perfect to be accurate, right? So, like, it really trains your form. But, you know, so figure out, answer your questions, figure it out, train for it, and just do it. Just pull this, rip the Band-Aid, get to a Western state, get in the mountains, and have no expectations of killing anything, because you're not going to. You know, I think Colorado Game and Fish says it, maybe 9 or 10% of non-resident hunters that come elk hunt kill. Mm-hmm. So, like, don't expect yourself to be in that 10%. Just come out and have fun, man. Get used to the mountain, get used to what gear you're going to need next time, make notes like, oh shoot, tennis shoes was a bad idea in the snow on the mountain, right? Like,
yeah,
just make notes of it, right? And just get out and do it, because you don't want to be 80 years old and wishing that you would have started, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff there. One thing, I'll start with this because I want to pick apart a few things right there. The practicing out to distance with your archery equipment, like even whitetail guys, I think, should be doing that, because, like you said, even though maybe you're not shooting 100 yards, like, I don't know, anybody used to play basketball or baseball, sports, whatever, or even football for that matter. Like, when I would warm up for a basketball game, I'd shoot at like 30 feet. Am I going to shoot 30 feet in a game? No, but now 21 foot looks a lot easier, right? Baseball. Guys, those big leaguers, they're looking at pitches that, like, they'll crank that pitching machine up to 120 miles an hour. Nobody's throwing that, but okay, now 95 looks a lot more doable. Like, anything, if you stretch it to your limits and then back down to what's going to be normal or regular, it's going to be easier. And like you're saying, your form has to be so perfect. I think that's a big thing even for whitetail hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talked to a lot of guys that are like, oh, guess what, Kurt? All winter, I shot my bow down in my basement, like almost every day. I'm like, cool. But you probably effed up a lot of stuff, man. You probably messed your form up pretty bad, just to be honest with you.
And didn't even know it.
Had no clue, because if your shot is off a half an inch at 20 yards, you're not going to think twice about it. You're not like, but that inch at 20 is like 6 inches at 90,
mm-hmm.
right? However that calculates math, but you guys get I'm saying is, and if you're off 6 inches at 90, I mean, something went a little bit wrong, right?
Yep.
So, you know, at 20 yards, to be honest with you, I never shoot 20 yards. I don't even have a 20 yard pin on my bow. And I know you guys are probably thinking, well, you're a Western guy, you don't. But like, no, I hunt a lot of whitetail. I killed a whitetail 2 years ago without a 20-yard pin at 15 yards. So,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no reason for me to practice at 20 yards ever. And I know I'm very polar right now, and I'm probably contradicting a lot of people right now when they talk about practicing bow and you know, archery and stuff like that. But for me as a hunter, not a target guy, I'm not a target archer. I'm a hunter. I have no reason to shoot 20 yards. Like, my arrow's not breaking. I don't see if I mess something up on my form or something's gone wrong, my release or my anchor point. I don't see that at 20 yards. So I'm just reinforcing bad habits over and over and over again without any feedback of something going wrong. So when I go out and shoot, my first shot is usually 40 yards, because I know the arrow breaks. I know something will go, if something's a little bit off, I can see it at 40. Mm-hmm. And then I go 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, all the way out to 100. That's kind of my routine. And then obviously as I get dialed in and I do like different like staging shots, like I'll come out and do a cold shot at 80, or I'll do like a kneeling shot right off the bat, or like cold, like I'll do a bunch of other stuff. But like, I know I'm getting super long winded, Canyon. I'm sorry, buddy.
No, dude, you're good.
But like, yeah, shooting at distance is super important. Shooting at 20 yards, I do not believe in.
No, that's good too. And it's like, that works for you, you know? And obviously you've done it long enough to figure out that works for you. And it probably would work for a lot of other guys too, if they would just get out of that mindset of only ever shooting at that. If they're trying to shoot farther distances, for sure. And you mentioned there the difference in target hunting and, or target archery and hunting and practicing for hunting. Those are two pretty different things. The mechanics of the shooting, okay, you can get into that. But as far as the mindset of a target archer versus practicing for hunting, that can be really different.
Super different. You want me to dig into that a little bit?
For sure.
All right. Yeah, like, I've never done a lot of target stuff, so I'm not going to speak too much to target, but I've always practiced for hunting. You know, target, typically indoor target, you're looking at 20 yards. You're looking at things to stabilize your bow, you know, long stabilizers, things to keep, huge, right? Like, yeah. Whatever, man, that's what it is. That's the game.
Yep.
So, and you know, the shot process has to be the same every time. There's a lot of breathing involved. Like, just like shooting a gun, breathing's super important when you shoot a bow too. But How I practice for, this is literally my, like, what I'll do. I'm not a guy that shoots the bow every day. After hunting season, I hang my bow up. I don't touch it until probably spring. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys are different in that realm, but I'm like, there's no reason for me to continue throwing reps down my bow and putting more reps on my strings. So I'll bring it out in spring and I'll start shooting, and I'm going to, like, you know, if I have a new piece of equipment, may have a new sight or whatever, like, I make sure the equipment's dialed in. So I'll shoot 20 yards, making sure the equipment's dialed okay. But you know, I'm gonna shoot static. I'm gonna shoot normal, like, you know, the feet perfectly wide apart, standing sideways, like in that traditional archery to kind of position. I'm going to shoot like that for a while, for probably a month. I'm going to shoot like that until I feel very confident that I could put that arrow pretty much wherever I want to put it at any distance. Once I feel very confident in that, I will start actually doing like live scenario shooting. So hardly ever, maybe like 5% of the time, have I ever killed an animal where I'm perfectly standing, you know, sideways with perfect form. That's never, with low heart rate,
right?
Never happens, never, right? So I'll practice like different angling shots. I'll practice one knee. I'll practice sitting on my butt. I'm gonna practice high heart rate. I'll do 20 burpees and then grab my bow and then try to calm my heart rate and calm my breathing to steady a good shot, right? I'm gonna shoot longer distances. I'm gonna shoot uphill, downhill, you know, I'm gonna shoot crouching, leaning, you know, anything to tweak and twerk my body, because that's actually hunting. Those are hunting situations. I'll go to a 3D archery range and pretend that I'm stalking the freaking target, right? Which I probably look like an idiot, but I'm gonna like go through the motions. Like, cool, if this was an animal right here, would I just be standing right here on the open? No, man, I'd be behind this bush, or I'd be over this log, or I'd be right here. This is what I would do. And I'll go through the moments of exactly what I would do so I don't get busted, but I can kill that animal, right? So I think all that stuff is really important, man, because if you don't practice that stuff and you're out in the field and you've never taken a kneeling shot, but you're kneeling and you need to draw your bow, you can't stand up, what are you going to do? You know, or you're up in a stand whitetail hunting and there's a limb and he's off in a position that you didn't expect him, but your only shot, and you got to squat down a little bit to get lower enough to make that shot. Like, have you ever taken a shot practicing when you're squatting? Probably not, but you probably should start practicing, right? So you never know.
Yep. It's the old adage, no matter what you're doing, you're not going to rise to the occasion. You're going to fall to your training, right? So if you've never done it, you're not just magically going to be able to when that bull elk is standing there at 50 yards or that 160-inch whitetail is standing there at 25 yards, right? If you've never done it, now is not the time to figure out if you can or not. You got to practice that stuff. And
you do.
The heart rate part of it, something I always try to mix in too, is push-ups, you know, burpees, do a down and back, jog to the target, grab your arrows, whatever it is, just to get that heart rate up. It's the only way we can really simulate the adrenaline and what's actually happening in the moment, which brings me back to something we talked about just a little bit earlier, was the fitness aspect of it. And I think everybody understands that when you're going out west and you're hunting at elevation, right, 5,000 to 10,000 feet elevation, anywhere in there, fitness is a huge part of it. Up and down hills, you're hunting big animals, you got big pack outs, you got to carry a heavy load. Everybody gets that, right? At least I think they do. And if they don't, it's going to be a huge shock to the system when they go out there. But a lot of guys that I think could benefit from that, again, that don't, is the whitetail guys, because they see Joe down the street who weighs 325 pounds who goes out and kills a deer every year. And that's awesome. But if we're talking about access too, more and more guys are having to go to public ground. That's or private land. The better shape you're in, the more likely you're going to be to push in a little bit farther and go to the good spots, to maybe pack in a stand and do a mobile setup, right? To go deeper than anybody else on public land, to want to go out there when it's colder or hotter and worry about packing a deer out. Like, fitness is could be such a huge part of whitetail hunting too. And it is for me. And I know a lot of other people it is too, but then there's this huge segment of whitetail hunters that just pay zero attention to it. And I think it's at a detriment to their success. And you'd mentioned you have kind of a background in that, and it's a big part of what you do as well. So I'd be interested to hear kind of your take on that and the things that you're doing to try to at least stay prepared for hunting fitness, if you will. Not that it's totally different than a lot of other types of fitness, but...
Yeah. No, man, I do dig in this one pretty deep, so bear with me. And if I go off on a tangent, let me know. But I have a huge background in fitness. I love fitness. And I, you know, there's a different type of level of fitness for me. So like, I think any level of fitness for anybody is great. Like, if you're not doing anything and then you decide, man, I'm going to go walk a half a mile a day. Awesome, man. Like, no judgment at all. I think you're doing great. Keep up the good work. For me, I've just continued to evolve to a different level. So, you know, there's the gym rat that goes in there and pumps iron, does the bicep curls and, you know, the bench press and stuff. That's great, man. Good job. For me, that doesn't do a whole lot. And I'll tell you why here is because fitness for me is more mental toughness than it is physical ability. Physical ability happens with fitness, but I want to train mental toughness. And I think this will correlate well with whitetail guys and Western guys. So if you're training mental toughness, and I really think guys, a lot of people these days are super soft, man. We're super comfortable with everything. Like we're living in air conditioning and heating houses. We're like driving to work in vehicles. We're like, you know, if we get food whenever we want, and most people in the United States are overweight and they're just, everyone's just super, super, super comfortable and they don't really do hard things. Why would you do anything hard? Right. So yep. We've become really, really soft as a society, which will lead into disease and shortened lifestyle and like the whole works, man. I won't go down that road, but like, we're super soft, man. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, and I'll keep this just for the time point, just about hunting, is if I'm a whitetail hunter and I want to kill a big buck and I got some big bucks on the stand, well, if I want to kill him, I might need to sit in the stand all day. That's not a physical thing. That's a mental thing. What if it's raining out? What if the wind's blowing somewhat hard? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, it's just kind of rainy. It's not really nice out. I'm not going to sit in the stand today. I'm going to wait for the perfect environment and sit in the stand. Well, like, that's pretty soft-minded, right? Like, if you want to kill that deer, you got to be in that stand. You got to be in that stand a lot, right? That's mental toughness. So that's how I think it would apply to a whitetail hunter. For the Western guy, obviously, like, the physical part definitely applies. And obviously, like, the better shape you are on the mountain, really the more you can stay on the mountain and with less misery. But where the mental part of it comes from for a Western guy is staying on the mountain the longest. Like, it's not going to be rainbows and sunshine and unicorns on that mountain. Like, it's going to, you don't have weather. You're going to have blisters on your feet. You're going to be dehydrated. You're going to be, it's going to suck. You're going to be in misery and you're going to want to quit. And 3 days into it, when you're in misery and you're like, man, F this, I'm going back to the truck. You're not going to kill anything. You go back to the truck. You got to stay in the field, and that mental toughness is going to keep you in the field longer. And the longer you can stay in the field, the more success you're going to have. So my fitness comes down to, I like to pump weight iron too. I like to get a pump because it feels good. Or I can get the biceps big, do a good chest set. Like, it's fun. I like it.
Yeah.
But every workout, I say, okay, I'm going to put together a little HIIT training, little workout of how much pain can I get in this workout? How much can I make this suck? And some days are worse than others because I'm a little more motivated than other days. But every day I will get to a point in that workout where I want to quit, where it hurts so bad physically, my mind wants to give up. And your mind is the alarm system to your body. Mm-hmm. Your mind says, hey, buddy, you better slow down because you're going to hurt yourself. But the reality of it is that's an early alarm system. You can push way harder and go way longer than what your mind tells you. Mm-hmm. So you push that threshold of that feeling right there to say, nope, I can push harder. I can push longer. Shut up, mind. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to stay in the field. I'm going to stay in this workout. And I'm going to finish this workout. And not only am I going to finish this workout, I'm going to finish this workout hard. I'm not going to die. I might run out of breath. I may throw up after this workout, but I'm not going to die.
Right.
So I'm going to push that threshold. And if I could do that every day of push that pain threshold further and further and further, then when I'm on the mountain and it's day four, or day five, I haven't seen an elk or a mule deer in 3 days, been raining on me for two, and I got blisters all over, running out of food, hungry, dehydrated, wet, cold, I'm going to stay in the field because I built that mental resilience.
Resilience. That word. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That word and yeah. Mental toughness to stay in the field. Right. Yep. See, Canyon, I told you, man, I could talk for days.
We could do a whole podcast on that right there. And I think actually you're talking about that early alert system. I think I've heard this said, I could be pulling this out of midair, but they say like your mind will try to shut you down at 40% of your actual physical capacity. And obviously, yep. It'd be hard to pin that number down, but that's just kind of a number that I think I've heard thrown out. But, and there's going to be guys in the comments.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That are like, I don't want to hunt in the rain. I don't want to hunt in the wind. I'm fine with whatever I'm doing. Ooh. And you know what? Awesome. No, what we're talking about, though, is, do you want to get better? And do you want to be better? And do you want to be more consistently successful? And do you want to have those experiences? And that's the kind of mindset where you got to think, okay, I got to push a little more. What can I do? And you're talking about that, just doing the workout that sucks, right? I always think when I'm going into one, like, man, I don't want to do that. Well, that probably means I should do it. You know, if I think I don't want to do it, that's what I should probably be doing, yeah. You know? And man, music to my ears when you're talking about how soft people are and how comfortable you are as a society, because nobody does hard things. And that is like maybe the biggest benefit, obviously physical stuff aside, like you said, but maybe the biggest benefit to getting out and, like you said, whether it's picking something up that's heavy or going for a run or doing some pull-ups, is just you don't want to do it and you go do it anyway. And you're going to be so much better for that in life, let alone for hunting, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, and we're applying this towards hunting, but honestly, man, I do it for every aspect of my life. I'm an entrepreneur still, so I need that mental toughness in that realm. I need it with my family, being a husband, being a dad. You know, life is always going to punch you in the face. That's just part of life, man. And what are you going to do? You're going to complain about it and point fingers and blame other people, or you're going to get tough and suck it up and say, yep, let's go. Same thing with the guy whitetailing, right? Like if you don't want to sit in the rain, you don't want to sit in the wind, you don't want to sit in the elements, cool, man, no problem. But don't complain about not killing a deer, right?
Exactly.
If you complain about not killing a deer, but you can't get out and get through some hard stuff, then what are you doing? Like, don't complain about it.
Yeah, yeah. You have the answers to the test. if you don't want to use them, then don't be complaining. Yeah. You know, that's the same guys that talk about, oh, we don't have enough big deer, but then they go and they shoot the two-year-old deer. Like, I have no problems with a guy shooting a two-year-old buck, right? If that's what you want to shoot and that makes you happy, awesome, dude. I am here for it. Like, I was that guy at one time. But don't complain that we have no mature bucks. It's the same mindset. If you don't complain to me that you're not seen killing any big deer, or you haven't had any luck, or, you know, you're sore after you go for one hunt, or you're tired, or you can't do it if you're not putting in the work.
Man, absolutely. And, you know, don't look at other people and be like, oh, must be nice, right? Like, look at Kurt. He went on a grizzly bear hunt and he went and did this hunt, and God, must be nice. I mean, he's probably a rich dude. He's got a lot of money. It must be nice to be connected like that. If I was connected like that, then I would be doing all that stuff too. Look, buddy, you have not seen the last 20 years of my life. Mm-hmm. All right. You don't know what I've been through to create the life that I have right now. So, like, just because you want to sit on your butt and watch freaking Game of Thrones at night and eat freaking Cheetos and be 300 pounds, like, you're making those choices. I'm making different choices, man.
Yeah, exactly. I think those are three of the most dangerous words for a mindset in the English language is must be nice, because that,
oh, man,
all you're doing is making an excuse for yourself and saying, you know, that person, there's no way they actually worked for this, or it just happened for them and it could never happen.
Yeah, they're so lucky.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a totally the wrong mindset to have when it comes to anything, and especially hunting, which we see a lot of, man. There's a lot of jealousy in the hunting industry. And I think that's, and we could go down a whole road on that too, in the social media aspect. And I don't know, like, it's probably just as bad in the Western space as it is the whitetail space, but there's so much of it in the whitetail space.
Yeah, man. Like, and I'll do whatever your listeners find value in. If it's talking about social media, which is a big prevalent thing right now, man. And the big thing, I think social media is good, and I also think it's bad, right? So especially for a new hunter, man, social media can be really bad, but it can be really good. So if you're a new hunter coming out there, like, don't pay attention to everyone posting their glory pictures of the best moment of their life, right? Like, hunting's hard, man. There's a lot of failure in hunting. Like, were you a baseball guy, Canyon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're batting 300, you're successful 3 out of 10 times, and you're going to the Hall of Fame, and you're a professional baseball player.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're successful 3 times out of 10. Same thing with hunting, man. Like, you're not successful all the time. And when guys are posting the picture of when they are successful, it looks like, from the outside looking in, God, everyone else is killing deer. How come I'm not killing deer? I must suck as a hunter, and like, I'm no good. And now my self-worth is crap. And like, man, that's the bad part of social media, is you guys got to understand. And I really try to show that in like my films and stuff, of like, I show all my mess ups. Like, I was on a grizzly bear hunt last spring. I missed a grizzly bear with a gun at 100 yards. Like, how do you do that? That's a Volkswagen with a rifle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I did. I ended up killing the bear, but like, I show all that mistakes, and I think that needs to happen. Like, so anybody like has some influence, like, show your mistakes, man, because new hunters, young hunters, hunters that may not be as successful as you or might not have the opportunities as you, like, need to see that. They need to see that you're human too, and that there's mistakes. And, you know, the good thing about social media, the benefits are, like, it really can bring us as hunters together collectively, and we could have a lot of power as hunters. Like, there's a lot of groups, anti-hunting groups out there that are trying to take our rights away, like we alluded to. And if we were individuals, man, without that connection of social, it'd be really hard to fight that, but it could be a really good thing too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So we've covered a lot of ground, but one thing you said earlier was you're thinking about maybe going to a different Western state with less population. What are you thinking? North, west, south?
Oh man, I've not talked about this publicly. So this will be the first time. So you guys listen, it's the first time you're talking about it, but I love Colorado. Colorado is beautiful. The mountains are amazing.
And what part of Colorado are you in? Sorry to cut you off.
But... I live just east of the metro, like east of Parker.
Okay.
I live on a little acreage out there. So I'm like East Slope side of it.
And okay, gotcha.
You know, the western part of Colorado is completely different than the eastern. I feel like I belong more in the west than the eastern, but this is where I am. So I love Colorado, man. There's the mountains are beautiful. The hunting's great. The fishing's awesome. We have the most public land, you know, in the west. We have the biggest elk herd. So everything's great, except there's just too many people and our public lands are just overran. The city itself is super, super liberal. So there's a lot of liberal agendas and like I'm not a judgmental guy, but man, I just don't have that mindset of the liberal mindset. I relate more on the Republican side, the conservative side. And, you know, you have the introduction of the wolves and we're always fighting, fought off the lion hunting ban, and we're always fighting against stuff. So my daughter's 16, and when she graduates high school here in a couple of years, the plan would be a possible move to, I can't get away from Western hunting in Western states. So a possible move to a Western state that might be a little bit cheaper living, less population, but still have some of the beautiful mountains that we have here. But I have not narrowed it down, man. I'm looking at Montana, looking at Wyoming, looking at Arizona, maybe New Mexico. Like, I don't know where I'm going to end up, but I'm looking right now.
Yeah. I hear you. If I could ever get my wife talked into leaving, Montana would be on the short list, I think. Man, I just, the times we've been out there, I love it out there. It's like you said, it kind of checks all the boxes that you're talking about, really. But there are a few out there that do, for sure. And they've got some good elk hunting as well. I might try to get out there this year. I know a couple guys out in Montana that are way more well-versed in it than I am. Never done it. Been around them a few times when I've been out west, but might try to go do that. I think the draw odds are decent in Montana as well. So make it out there and try to do that just to get out there, because I'm one of those guys too. Like, I don't want to be 80 years old and wish I would have went and done it, you know. And I think there's a lot of guys out here that, for whitetail hunters, it seems like elk is like the bucket list or like the carrot, you know, out there in front of the horse. It's like, man, I would love – I've talked to very few people about it that say, yeah, I'd never want to go on an elk hunt. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, you know, and I'm a whitetail guy. I grew up whitetail hunting, right? So I have that core of whitetail, and a whitetail hunter is like, God, I'd love to go Western hunting. I want to go Western hunting, and they crave Western hunting, whether it be mule deer, elk, or whatever. Western guys crave whitetail hunting.
Yeah.
It is, man. It's the truth. Like, I talk to so many Western guys, like, oh man, I'd love to go to Kansas and do a whitetail hunt, or Iowa, or like, they just love whitetail hunting. Isn't that a crazy, like, phenomenon right there?
It is. It is. I think there's a bug for both of them, though. Like, and you, once you get bit with it, it's hard to shake it. Like, even on that mule deer hunt I was in Arizona, on like the far east unit. And it was cool because I could hunt like high desert, so like 5,000. And the southern part of it, and then I could go up to the north part and hunt like 8,500 feet. So I got kind of the best of both worlds on a mule deer hunt. But up on the northern part of it, I got into like some good elk country, and I found myself like 40 yards from a huge herd of cows, and then there's two bulls up on the ridge, you know, a few hundred yards away, just bugling, screaming back and forth, and I'm like, I gotta do this, you know, like, it's just, and I get that about whitetail hunting too, you know, you get a November morning, like, cold, quiet and the woods just explodes with a buck coming, does coming through in this buck parade one after the other. You get that one hot doe and it's like just, there's something about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they both have that in their own respect. But guys that do one want to do the other. I mean, it's just, that's just kind of life, right?
Yeah, you're 100% right. And then a lot of the Western guys have not really done much whitetail hunting. So that's what they want to do. Like, oh man, I'd love to have a big whitetail. But for me, like, I absolutely fell in love with elk hunting because of that moment you just shared. Like, you're down there, you're close to elk, like you're in their living room and you got bulls screaming back and forth. Like, God, nothing beats that. Mm-hmm. But I also like glorify, I love to be able to have a farm where I'm putting out food plots and I'm doing scrape lines and I'm clearing some stuff. I'm doing some burns and like all about managing whitetail and like basically growing whitetail that I can hunt. Right, man. I would love to be able to do that too.
Yeah. You know? I think that's similar to the elk thing. Everybody thinks about shooting the elk and everybody thinks about shooting the whitetail, but like on the Western side, they kind of miss the whole experience and the scenery and actually being out there. And just like you said, the adventure part of it. And on the whitetail side, guys don't think about what you're talking about there, which is something that the guys that I know that have been doing it a long time and that have the opportunity to manage some ground now, me being one of them, is we fall in love with that part just as much as harvesting a deer. Like it is, it's so much fun to see what you can improve year after year to try to help grow the biggest, healthiest herd possible. And that part of it, guys, it would be a huge draw if people really realized it. Obviously, it sounds like you've got kind of that on the mind, but yeah, there's, you get the bug for that too, just like I'm sure you do the adventure thing like you mentioned earlier.
Oh, I love the adventure thing. And isn't a funny thing is like, if we're all talking to an anti-hunter, they're like, you know, the perception of anti-hunters is like, oh, you just guys want to kill everything. Like you don't care about the animal. And the reality of it is like, we would literally spend thousands and thousands of dollars to make sure the deer are fed, make sure they have good habitat, to make sure they're comfortable, to like, heck, I would like build a house with some hay and some straw so they have a bed to sleep at night. Like I would like care for my deer like they're my family, man. You know what I mean? Like I cared that much about the deer, but yes, I also want to shoot one. You know, I want to harvest one. I want to kill one, but I care so much about the species of the animals, right? Like, I don't think someone that isn't a hunter like this understands that concept. They just look at like, we want to kill stuff. That's not it, man. We care. Like, I know, you know, I'm talking to an animal hunter right now, right? Like, I know you care about the animal. You don't want to see him killed, but I can argue, I actually care more about that animal than what you do.
Yeah.
You know, so isn't that crazy?
And
it's crazy.
Hunters have done way more for conservation than any anti-hunter group.
Oh, for sure.
I'm willing to say that, with a lot of certainty that hunters have done way more for conservation because we get to enjoy the resource and we have that end result and that in mind. So like, of course we want to take care of it and we're going to take care of it and do a better job than people who just have this, I don't know, animal utopia in their mind where these things just frolic around all day and it's hunky dory, you know, yeah, like
it's a Disney movie for them, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we're running close on time here. I don't want to keep you too much longer. So something you want to leave people with and then tell them where they can find you as well. And I'll link everything of yours down in the description too. But something you want to leave the people with, I know, like I said, we've talked about a lot of different things, but, anything we didn't cover that you want to get out there or anything like that. And then, like I said, just tell people where they can find you.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, cause we really hit on it a lot. And this is kind of my life story of like, look, you know, don't have regrets when you get old and wish you would have done something. Like live the life you want to live. And that's what I'm doing. I wanted to change something in my life. And I made a huge drastic change in my life. Like to the fact of like giving up and shutting down businesses with a family, risking the well-being of my family to do what I want to do and live my life the way I want to live. So if you're out there and you're an East Coast guy and you want an elk hunt, don't wait till it's too late. Live the life you want to live. Go do it. If you're a Western guy and you want to go whitetail hunting, don't wait, man. Go do it. Right. So just go out and live the life that you want to live. You can create anything you want. Just create it. Just don't give yourself excuses. Just do it. So that's what I'm going to leave you guys with. And if you want to see any of my content, it's Western Obsessions TV. We do a lot. I try to do a lot of my longer form content on YouTube so you can see like the actual hunts, but a lot of my little stuff and day-to-day stuff on Instagram, Facebook, and a little bit on TikTok. So
sweet. All right, man. Yeah. Life's too short. I think that's a great place to leave it.
It's great. That's great.
All right, dude. Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate the time. And we'll have to do this again at some point, because I'd like to get it more into the elk hunting stuff too, because I've teased doing a series with some of the other Western guys about like strategy stuff on elk hunting. So maybe we could do that one of these days.
Yeah, I'd love to. Anytime you want me on, let me know, dude. I'll carve out an hour for you, and we can go as deep as you want in strategy of Western hunting or fitness or entrepreneurship, like whatever you want to do, man. I'm all about it, and I appreciate you letting me come on. I'm just trying to get that network out there a little bit, you know, and as I have a big hunt or a big launch, I might hit you back up and say, ask for like a help on promoting it or something like that.
Absolutely, man. Love to do it.
Cool.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big.